This is Marketplace from APM. I'm David Gura.
Watching the value of Pinterest surge got us wondering, how do they come up with values for tech startups? How do you put a dollar amount on companies that often have no revenue and can be the riskiest of investments? Well, that big number estimate is as much art as it is science, or fuzzy math, as Sarah Fryer calls it in her latest piece for Bloomberg Business, all about startup valuation. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
So just walk us through it. How do you come up with a valuation? Or most commonly, how do you come up with a valuation?
So it's a little bit of back and forth. So the founder will go out and take meetings with venture capitalists, sovereign wealth funds, with institutional investors like the big banks who are trying to get in on these deals. And they'll negotiate. They'll say, you know, I think we're worth this much. This is our projected growth. And the investors will say, okay, I'll give you that, but I want to guarantee that I make my money back no matter what, and I want to guarantee that I'll make it back in a reasonable time frame.
You write about these backroom agreements that happen now with increasing frequency. What gets hammered out behind those closed doors?
The founder of a company will get all of these deals, what are called term sheets, from these investors, and they'll review them. They'll say, oh, well, these guys are promising that I won't lose as much of my stake in the company. I don't have to sell as much of the company's stock in order to get a really great amount of cash to fuel my growth. They'll bounce them off each other. And in the end, what the public hears is just the valuation and how much they raise. You hear Uber's worth $40 billion, Snapchat's worth $15 billion, Pinterest is worth $11 billion. What you don't hear is the steps that it took to get there.
So if this is an educated guess, at what point do investors, do the founders of these companies, find out whether or not that was a good guess?
Probably at the time of the IPO. That's when they really get judged by the public markets. And all of the hype and, you know, coziness of these deals in the private markets get exposed. And so this is, just to give you an example, so Box, for example, the cloud storage company, they went public recently at a valuation that was lower than the valuation that they had promised investors. So they actually had to automatically give their investors more stock at the time of the IPO to make sure that they made everything they wanted to make out of the deal.
$1 billion companies are described as unicorns because of how rare they are. And now we're seeing, as you point out, decacorns, so something even more mythic, perhaps. What is a decacorn? And then why are we seeing so many more of them?
So unicorns were the term for the billion-dollar companies, but now there are more than 50 of them. And there are more and more companies that are more than $10 billion in value. And companies are realizing that it's really easy to get capital in private markets. It's easy to go to investors who have fear of missing out on the next Google or Facebook. They want to get in your company early. And they have these multi-billion dollar funds they need to disperse among companies. So they're willing to put in tons of capital. It's all coming together to produce these decacorns.
I wanted to talk about Snapchat. This is a company that's valued at $15 billion. And that puts it on par with Clorox. It puts it on par with Campbell's Soup. These are companies that make actual products. And I wonder, is it advantageous not to have to worry about production? Or does that make it actually harder to justify your worth?
It's one of these growth games. Companies like Facebook and Twitter have taught us that you don't necessarily need to already be making money in order to be a valuable company. You can decide on your revenue path, your business path later. And so these companies that have these what are called hockey stick growth curves, where you see them bringing in users all around the world and people have really high amount of time they spend on the app, then they're thinking, well, all you got to do is turn the switch on and that company will be making tons of money. It's not that easy, of course, but
yes, exactly. Sarah Fryer wrote the piece, The Fuzzy Insane Math That's Creating So Many Billion-Dollar Tech Companies, for Bloomberg, where she's a reporter. Sarah, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.